O Lord, no one can understand your transcendental pastimes, which appear to be human and are so misleading. You have no specific object of favor, nor do you have any object of envy. People only imagine that you are partial. Purpose by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada Ki Jai. The Lord's mercy upon the fallen souls is equally distributed. He has no one as the specific object of hostility. The very conception of the personality of Godhead as a human being is misleading. His pastimes appear to be exactly like a human being's, but actually they are transcendental and without any tinge of material contamination. He is undoubtedly known as partial to his pure devotees. But in fact, he is never partial, as much as the sun is never partial to anyone. By utilizing the sun rays, sometimes even the stones become valuable. Whereas a blind man cannot see the sun, although there are enough sun rays before him. Darkness and light are two opposite conceptions, but this does not mean that the sun is partial in distributing his rays. The sun rays are open to everyone, but the capacity of the receptacles differ. Foolish people think that devotional service is flattering the Lord to get his special mercy. Factually, the pure devotees who are engaged in the transcendental loving service of the Lord are not a mercantile community. A mercantile house renders service to someone in exchange for values. The pure devotee does not render service unto the Lord for such exchange. And therefore, the full mercy of the Lord is open for him. Suffering and needy men, inquisitive persons or philosophers make temporary connections with the Lord to serve a particular purpose. When the purpose is served, there is no more relationship with the Lord. A suffering man, if he is pious at all, prays to the Lord for his recovery. But as soon as his recovery is over, in most cases, the suffering man no longer cares to keep any connection with the Lord. The mercy of the Lord is open for him, but he is reluctant to receive it. That is the difference between a pure devotee and a mixed devotee. Those who are completely against the service of the Lord are considered to be in abject darkness. Those who ask the Lord for favor only at the time of necessity are partial recipients of the mercy of the Lord. And those who are 100% engaged in the service of the Lord are full recipients of the mercy of the Lord. Such partiality is in receiving the Lord's mercy is relative to the recipient. And it is not due to the partiality of the all-merciful Lord. When the Lord descends on the material world by His all-merciful energy, He plays like a human being. And therefore it appears that the Lord is partial to His devotees only. That is not a fact. Despite such apparent manifestation of partiality, His mercy is equally distributed. In the battlefield of Kurukshetra, all persons who died in the fight before the presence of the Lord got salvation without the necessary qualifications, because death before the presence of the Lord purifies the passing soul from the effects of all sins. And therefore the dying man gets a place somewhere in the transcendental abode. Somehow or other, if someone puts himself open to the sun rays, he's sure to get the requisite benefit, both by heat and ultraviolet rays. Therefore the conclusion is that the Lord is never partial. It is wrong for the people in general to think of Him as partial. Om Agyanatam Anandasya Gyanam Gana Salakaya Chaksurun Milatam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Sri Taitanyam Rambistam Chaptam Yenam Bhutale Swayam Rupa Gadamayam Dadati Svam Tantikam Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Vijayananda Shri Adaita Gadara Shiva Sri Gaura Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So here Queen Kunti Devi is glorifying the transcendental pastimes of the Lord and the impartiality of God. Of course, the Supreme Personality of God, it appears in the material world in a what is called a human form, meaning that his body looks like our body, and therefore we tend to think that God's form is the same as our body. So this, as Krishna says in the Gita, avajananti ma mudha, that those who are less intelligent, the fools, they consider that the material, that the transcendental body of the Lord to be material. But as Krishna says, they do not understand my transcendental nature and my supreme dominion over all that being. Isn't that right, Ravi? Mm-hmm. Supreme dominion. Not partial dominion. We have partial dominion. It's like we might be in charge of a house or a car or a family or a bank balance. So we have partial dominion. But God has complete dominion over all that be. So the potency of God obviously is unlimited. He has unlimited potency. So when he comes into the material world, God remains hidden. Now many people think, why should God remain hidden? What do you think, Ravi? Why should God remain hidden? Why not just expose himself to everyone?
Well, why should he?
Well, why not? He's God, and we're all his servants, so why isn't he so kind that he just lets us all know that who he is, so that we can know, oh, here is God. Why does he remain covered by his illusionary energy?
Because we don't want to know. Most people don't want to know.
Oh, very good. Yes. And why don't they want to know?
Because they want to. They want to be God. They want to be Krishna. They want to enjoy.
Because they're envious. So this envy of God, therefore, this is the nature of the material world. That everyone comes to the material world out of enviousness. And this envy is manifested in what? How is envy manifested?
Desire.
Lust. In the form of calm, lusty desires, calm, crowed, frustration, anger, lobe, hankering, illusion, moh. Pandaji Maharaj, give some explanation of these things. Calm, crowd, love. Bola, bola.
You have said everything.
So, basically, the living entity comes to the material world to imitate God, and Krishna does not interfere with that. Good example Prabhupada's using, of course, people accuse God of being partial because Krishna says that Pritranaya Sadhuna, that I come also to please the devotees, to protect my devotees. Read that verse, Pritranaya Sadhuna.
Pritranaya Sadhuna, Vinashaya Skritam, Dharma Samstapanathaya, Samabhami Yuga Yuga.
What's the English?
English is to deliver the pious and annihilate the miscreants as well as to establish the principle.
Going slowly, you're like a machine gun.
To deliver the pious and to annihilate the miscreants as well as to establish the principles of religion. I myself appear millennium after millennium.
So that first line again, to?
Paritraya.
The first line, to?
To deliver the pious.
To deliver the pious. So one may ask, well, why should God only deliver the pious? Why not everyone? After all, everyone is suffering. So one should say that this seems to be an impartiality on God's half, on God's behalf, because he's coming to deliver the pious and he's going to annihilate the miscreants. But if you study that very carefully, those who are annihilated by Krishna, they also obtain full mukti, moksha. And those who are delivered, the pious, they also obtain moksha. So in actuality, God is completely impartial in his dealings, but it appears that there's impartiality. Now further, this point is brought up, just like the good example of the sun rays, just like the sun is shining on everyone. And Prabhupada says, even a dull stone can take benefit and become a sparkling diamond. Just like a beautiful diamond stone. It's getting its energy from the sun. But there's lots of stones who don't take benefit of the sun. They remain dull. Similarly, there are human beings who capture the sun. They actually capture the sun, they utilize the sun. They get great benefit from the sun. But there are others who don't get any benefit from the sun. But can you blame the sun? Can you say that it's the sun's fault? It is not the sun's fault. This is a crude example. But the fault lies in the recipient of that energy. In other words, God's energy is there. God's mercy is there for everyone. Everyone is getting the mercy of God. And everyone has the right to have the mercy of God. The mercy of God is available to everyone. But as Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Yeyamam Prapadyante, as they approach me, I reciprocate. There's some requirement of reciprocation. God is not, if knowledge of God or love of God was not based upon a reciprocal agreement, then God would become an object of service. You see, everything in the material world becomes an object, becomes a serviceable object to us. Whatever we see in this world, we want to make it serviceable. So therefore, when we see a beautiful woman, we want to capture her. When we see lots of money, we want to capture her. We have a nice car, when we see a good house, when we see this, that, whatever we see, nice food, we want to capture it in our belly, isn't it? Everything, we want to capture it. Some nice music, we go down and buy our CDs from our Christmas gift vouchers and capture the music in our ears. So we want to capture, all the time, capture, capture. So this is lusty affair. Everyone is running around the material world, trying to capture Krishna's energy without Krishna. They don't care about Krishna. And sometimes, when they're frustrated in their attempts to capture Krishna's energy, they become pious. You see, this is the beauty of material energy. Material energy smashes them. It's like sometimes in prison, an ardent prisoner, a criminal, burglar, thief, rogue, debauchee, he becomes reformed. One day he wakes up and realizes, my life is a total mess. And I've spent 40 years of my life in prison. Maybe I should do something to stop this. So he reforms himself. As soon as he becomes reformed, then the prison governor says, hey, look, Charlie's really changed. You know? He's become a nice guy. Yeah, let's let him go early. You see? So he gets out. This is called released on account of good behavior. So the material world is like that. Material world is working from what we call cause and effect. See, there's the cause and the effect. You go and answer the call. So material world works on the basis of cause and effect. Krishna is the supreme cause. Ishvara Parama Krishna Sachidananda Vigraha Ade Ade Govinda Sarva Karna Karnam. He is the supreme cause of all causes. But when we become envious of God, we become the imitator cause. You see? So there's the supreme cause and there's a relative cause. In the material world, we're relatively causing things to happen. Just like I might cause a big party where everyone comes and enjoys. But the ingredients in the party, the food, the liquor, everything is provided by God. You see? So, I may be the secondary doer, not even secondary, because actually the demigods, Brahma, demigods, etc., they're secondary cause. But I feel that I'm the main cause. But all of the ingredients and all of the accommodation and all of the facilities, all of the energy is provided by God. So one should understand that this is the kindness of God. God is so kind that even though we hate his guts, even though we haven't got the slightest interest in him, and rather we'd like to take his position and kick him out, this is our envious heart, even though he is constantly providing endlessly, through millions and millions of births, He's providing us with facilities. So therefore, when one becomes entangled in this cause and effect, then there is various reactions. If one is acting on the mode of goodness, there's good reactions. If one is acting with a mixture of goodness and passion, particularly passion, there's the stressful reaction. You can see when people are very passionate, it always leads to distress. Sometimes we notice you get into a real passionate frenzy, and suddenly everything starts to go wrong, and you get excited, and you get very angry, and it causes a lot of distress. You see? And then, when we become frustrated even with distress and passion and all of that, then we take to intoxication, sleep, ignorance. We go for annihilation. In other words, people jumping off bridges, driving over beachy head cliffs into the sea, drowning themselves in alcohol, engaging in abominable perversions. All of these are predominantly mode of ignorance. Smoking, drinking, licentious activities. It's all a symptom of deep frustration. You see? People call it so-called happiness. But this type of happiness is not happiness. It's all a symptom of disease condition. So, therefore, the living entity, according to his activities, sometimes he goes up, sometimes he's going down, sometimes he's hanging in the mediocre, in the intermediate planets, like the middle planetary system. When he does very good activities, he's rewarded by going to the heavenly planets, enjoying beautiful duration of life and beautiful apsara girls that are, their beauty would make you faint, and gardens full of all sorts of nectar and beautiful lakes and rivers and beautiful music. All of the highest experiences, if you like, all of the highest experiences that material nature has to offer. Just like in this planet, we can see that there's some incredible things that nature can offer you, isn't it? There's some incredible combinations and permutations of energy. And there's some horrible conditions. So we see, even on this planet, there's some kind of heavenly experience, there's some hellish experiences. Now, so we see that when people experiences, when they experience these experiences, sometimes they start to become intellectual, philosophical. They start to question the very nature of their existence. Why? Just like when your leg gets blown off or something, or you end up crippled in a car accident, then you suddenly become a great philosopher. Before, you didn't even stop to think about anything. But now you suddenly become religious, you become a philosopher, or you become a complete atheistic demon. Sometimes you find people that are extremely suffering, they completely hate God. They hate God for what He did to them. So this then makes one believe that God is some sort of either a despot. Is that the word? That He's completely, they use the word despot. You know that word? It's kind of like a complete autocratic, unanswerable, unapproachable
tyrant.
Some sort of tyrant who seems to almost get pleasure in the kind of different types of misery that he can inflict on the poor little living entities. So that makes people question religion a lot, because they say, what sort of God could stand back and watch all of these horrible things going on this planet? But what they don't understand is that they don't understand that the material energy works on the basis of cause and effect. That the living entity becomes subjugated to a particular amount of conditional existence, a certain amount of power, just like we can see in our own selves. Each one of us has a certain amount of power. And that power is capable of causing a certain thing to happen. If you're a very big fella, you can cause big things to happen. Just like we see in terms of relativity, that someone can cause a disturbance in their house, but someone can cause a disturbance in the whole country. Someone can cause a disturbance in 5 countries, like our friend Adolf. See, Adolf was just another human being like me or you, but somehow he had the power that he could cause so much disturbance in the lives of people. So therefore, relatively speaking, if you have a certain amount of power, then you have a certain amount of causation, a certain amount of reaction. You may cause things to happen, you get a certain amount of reaction. So naturally, the bigger disturbance you create in Krishna's energy, the bigger reaction you get. So sometimes that you do high pious activities, you get rewarded, sometimes you're punished. So this is the laws of material nature. But at all times we can understand that the living entity is subjugated. He's a subject. He's not a dominator. He's not a controller. He's subjected to a particular reward or punishment. Just like someone might say, I am the supreme controller of the universe. Right? But then you say, well, how come you're suffering? Oh, that's my lila. You see? Sometimes I like to pretend I'm suffering, but I'm not really suffering. So there's even these demons who imitate Krishna. They come and there's big bogey yogis and so many things. They say, I'm God. But we can see, automatically, they're subjected to the stringent laws of material energy. So when Krishna comes down into the material world, it appears that he's also subjected to these laws of material energy. Therefore people say, that's not God. How can that be God? Just like he comes as Devaki Nanda, the son of Devaki. So people say, well, his mother was called Devaki, my mother was called Maggie. So what's the difference? His dad was called Vasudev, my dad is Joe. So what's the difference? Then he's a young baby, he's living in the village of Nanda, Yasoda. He has little boyfriends and girlfriends and he's playing with them, they're tickling his tummy, he's laughing. Sometimes he's misbehaving, Krishna would misbehave and he would annoy the elderly gopis. Sometimes he would urinate on the floor and cause his mother to become angry. She just cleaned up the whole room and then he would just urinate right there on the floor. So people say, oh, this is God? No, this cannot be God. Then sometimes he was crying because Mother Yasoda would threaten him, you rascal, again you broke that yoga pot, come here and I'll hit you. And Krishna would hide with Balaram behind the pillar and shake, because if Mother Yasoda caught him, that stick was going to be pretty sore. Then sometimes Krishna would be engaged in being breastfed by Mother Yasoda. So many things. Some people say, oh, these are just ordinary stories. What's so special? But when we look closely at Krishna, we find, even at the very young age, even as a baby, he was able to kill the big demoness, Putana. Putana was a very powerful demoness. Now, she was a demon, and she was instructed by Kamsa to kill all the babies. So what she would do is she would appear as a very beautiful nurse and come to the houses and look after the children, like a babysitter. And then she would let the babies suck her breast and kill them. So when she came to the house of Mother Yasoda, Mother Yasoda was so magnanimous, and she saw this beautiful nurse, she said, oh, you can look after Krishna. So she was looking after Krishna. So then, when Mother Yasoda wasn't looking, she tried to breastfeed Krishna to kill him. But she made a mistake. This wasn't an ordinary baby. This baby was the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So he sucked out her very life force and killed her. That, as soon as she realized that this was God going to kill her, then she, in order for her to try and fight with him, she assumed a gigantic form, enormous form, trying to use all her shakti. But it was too late. Krishna had finished her. So therefore, as a small little baby, Krishna is able to kill such a big demon. So we can understand, then people say, oh, this is fairy tales. Who can do, what sort of funny story is this? This doesn't make any sense. So people become bewildered with Krishna. They're not sure whether he's human, they're not sure whether he's a myth, whether he's just a story out of some book, whether it's someone's imagination, whether he's a god, whether he was a Romeo. They don't know what, they can't figure him out at all. Even people have studied Krishna for so many centuries. They don't understand Krishna. Because Krishna remains hidden by his curtain of Maya. This is the point that also Queen Kunti is making, that you are just like a, Prabhupada used a good example, and Kunti also used that example, that just like sometimes we see that when there's a drama going on, even our own brother can be up on stage and we can't recognize him. Afterwards you go, which one were you? You see? Which one were you? Your own brother you can't recognize. Even your own father, your own mother. Because such is the power of illusion. That if your brother dresses up as a woman, just like one time we were doing a play in Hindu Union in Mombasa. So Trinavi had to dress as Mother Sita. We lost our Mother Sita. She was in hospital. So he had to take the place. So he had to dress as a woman, and he was really good. He looked just like a woman. Nobody noticed throughout the whole play. So then what we didn't realize was when the play ended, he was still in his costume, which was a female costume. Then he came up and stayed with us all night in our room. So it freaked out the night watchman, because this is actually a temple. And, you know, Matajis are not supposed to stay with the men. So he didn't notice, you see. He was totally bewildered by the illusionary representation of Janavi's mystic power. So if that can be in a small, tiny jiva, we can have such bewildering potency. Then what to speak of the Supreme Personality of God? What sort of maya can he create? You see? What sort of maya is he capable? Just like when Vishwanath Chakravarti, when he talks about the maya of Krishna, he gives an example, this is a true story, that he was actually preaching to a king. He was preaching in the palace of a king. Because he was a great Vaishnava, the king kept him there as a very dear friend. So these magicians, Ravi, did you ever hear the story? These magicians came to the king and they wanted to show him their performance. It turns out they were very powerful magicians. And Vishwanath Chakravarti writes all this down. He recorded it as it happened. So it's not just some story. So they were doing a performance in front of the king. Now it was the wife and the husband and two children. Now all of them were doing these amazing tricks. And then halfway through the performance, the king was so impressed that he offered them a kind of payment or some reward. He was very impressed with these magicians, but they refused. Then they carried on their show. Then all of a sudden there was a fight between the husband and the wife. And great commotion happened. All the audience was freaked out. Suddenly the man pulled out a sword and started chopping his wife up. Then his kids. And suddenly before he managed to chop his wife, she chopped him. So suddenly, right in front of the king, there was these dead bodies. And all the limbs were lying around, blood everywhere. So the king was completely devastated by the whole affair. So So they cleaned everything up, and after that everyone was completed. Then the next day they all came back. The husband, the wife, and the two kids. And they said that you forgot to give us our reward yesterday. And the king was amazed. So this is the power of illusion. Even in the realm of magicians, you can see some magicians are tremendously, they have amazing ability. We don't know how they do it. It's a mystical thing. Prabhupada said even in his youth, some magicians would come and they would be able to do things in front of you, like pull big stones out of your eyes. They would just, big stone would come out like that. Produce things, make things disappear. So many illusions. So Vishwanath Chakravarti notes that. So just imagine how much magical power God has. Actually, if you look at God's creation, it's all magical. It's all magical. It's magical the way material energy works, how it interacts, how things go on. The most magical thing about Krishna's creation is people. Because you've got these people that are weird and wonderful, and there's all these little exchanges and interactions going on, and there's all this little stuff that goes on. And if you look at it in a higher level or lower level, there's all this amazing, just like modern science, or they have these BBC nature studies, and they're just looking at the complexity of the way relationships go on, even in the animal kingdom and the insect kingdom. So all of these are wonderful. Nobody can create these things. Nobody has been able to create a single peanut since the dawn of creation. You haven't seen, who's seen anyone create even a single little peanut? With all our big advancement and big technology and super scientific knowledge, but not even one single peanut has been produced. They can mess up a peanut, put in a new, to make it so fat that it's tasteless, or so small that it chokes you, or whatever. But they can't actually make it a single peanut. Not a single grain of rice can be produced by these people. Yes, they can manipulate already existing energy and change it into another form, or somehow do this or that. So we see this is called achintya shakti. Every one of us, we also have achintya shakti. We have this. Shakti means ability, power. So we also have, all of us, just like Prabhupada says, your nails. This is a chintya shakti. How suddenly the skin changes into a nail. Can you explain that? Scientifically? Can't explain? Science don't have an explanation? How skin changes into a nail? Maybe DNA or chromosomes or something. But it's mystical. How, if you look at your hair, how it stops at a certain point, how your skin turns into nails just at the end. You see? The creation of the Lord is full of all sorts of wonderful arrangements. Wonderful arrangements, so that everything functions according to this complete Purnam, Om Purnamada Purnam, that the Lord is complete. So His creation is complete. But in the material world there is complete bewilderment. Also, complete bewilderment of the living entities who are envious of Krishna. So this is called Maya Aputya Jnanam. Namam Daskritya Mura Prapadyante Narada. As Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita. Maya Aputya Jnanam Asuram Bhav Mashritya. That these types of impious demons. Pandaji Maharaj. You have the verse?
No, I have some answer of what is it.
Give me.
This is, I envy no one or I am partial to anyone. I am equal to all, but whoever renders service unto me in devotion is a friend. Is in me and I am also a friend to him.
So these four types of demons, Duskritina. Kritina means pious. Those who are pious. Duskritina, those who are impious. Mudha, Mula means those asses and donkeys and fools who work hard. I worked hard all my life. I don't need anyone or anything. Whatever I got in this world, son, I made it myself. No one did me any favors. I was up every morning, 4 o'clock. I came home at night, 10 o'clock at night. Just to put some food on the table for you and the kids and mom. And now I'm an old man, I'm still up trying to get that few pennies in the bank. So that's called mudha. Mudha means ass. Ass means someone, they work very hard, thinking that they're the cause. And because of their hard work, the effect is they have a house to keep you, son. And food on the table, son. And that's why we can go on holidays down to Bognor Regis every year. And that's why your mom can buy a new dress once a month. Because I worked hard. So this is called mudha. So Naradama, Nara means human being, Dhamma means the lowest type of human beings. Naradama, those who are the lowest of mankind. Sometimes you meet them, isn't it? This guy's the lowest of mankind. Or this woman's the lowest of mankind. So Krishna says, those types of rakshas and demons. And what's the other one? Maya pita jnanam. Maya means illusion. Aplita jnana means that knowledge that we gain in the material world. This is called illusory knowledge. We think we have knowledge. Just like we think we have substance, but we don't. We're insubstantial. We think we have permanence, but we don't. We are transitory. We think we have knowledge, but we don't. You see? This is all... we are like, living in a world of, as Prabhupada used that nice word, phantasmagoria. Castles in the sky. Just like we think we have knowledge. We think we have knowledge, but in actuality we have no knowledge because we don't know what is the cause. Our knowledge is the interreaction of the effect. So it's partial knowledge. It's not complete until we have the cause. Just like Prabhupada says, it's like an example. At nighttime, it's very, very dark, so you might go out with your little torch and try to illuminate the earth. Can you imagine you're out there with your little torch trying to shine up the whole earth? But when the sun comes, immediately, everything becomes distinguishable. Your torch becomes insignificant. So that mundane knowledge is like sometimes when you're in Africa, you see these little fireflies, they make this like electricity. Glowworms? Glowworms. So they look very amazing, and they actually do brighten up the night. But when the sun comes, they're insignificant. So similarly, this knowledge of the material world that appears very wonderful and very amazingly complex. But all it is a study, a very imperfect study of God's perfect energy. So therefore, without understanding God, that knowledge is called stolen by illusion. Stolen. Just like, if you could use an example. If I come to your house and I steal something, you'll immediately recognize when you come back, oh, the television is gone. It's been stolen. But if I steal your television and leave a replica, but it's useless, you understand what I mean? Then you'll come home, you won't notice your telly's gone. But when you go to use it, you'll find out it's useless. Then you'll realize, hey, someone cheated me. You see? Very clever. They took my telly and they gave me this useless thing that doesn't work, doesn't have even any inside. But outside it looks just like a telly. So that's a crude example that also we understand that Krishna takes away our knowledge, but he leaves us this so-called knowledge, shadow knowledge. limited knowledge, imperfect knowledge. And therefore, that knowledge actually cannot deliver to us the result. It can only give us some temporary satisfaction or some temporary adjustments, like we might be able to adjust the material world to another so-called comfortable position or make some adjustment in nature or whatever. But these things are all little, just like they're going up to put up their big telescope, Hubble, which is giving them a lot of trouble. Hubble's giving a lot of trouble. So they go up there and they're messing around. This little telescope, in terms of the universe, is only a little, it's like a little, some toy. And they can, what do they can, now they can see further out. But what is the result? The result is more speculation. Before they had the Hubble, they were speculating. Now they can speculate even more. No factual knowledge. Just some idea that maybe this and maybe that and maybe this is going to happen. Maybe that's a cosmic bubble or maybe that's a soap bubble. Who knows? It could be just a... Actually, with a telescope, if you had some dust on the end, you could actually look at it and say, oh, I've seen another universe. You know, someone cleans the end. Oh, it wasn't after all. Because when you're dealing with imperfect senses, that's the way it works. You're not sure what the heck you're seeing, but, you know, oh yes, I discovered a new asteroid, which we didn't see before, going around the planet Jupiter. It's amazing. Then there's a whole big investigation into that lump of rock. See, but there's no real information now, even the last 30 years. Who's benefited really from all of this speculation? Some scientists had good wages, and the American war machine is now more efficient to destroy other countries. There's huge companies that now are able to use mobile phones and Sky TV and whatever. But the normal person on the street, who's the one who sweated blood to get this money, what has he got from it all? Just cheaters and cheated. The Bible said the material world is full of cheaters and cheated. People are cheated. Instead of giving people knowledge, they give them more headache, more illusion, more speculations. Hundreds of magazines with new ideas, new speculations into the cause of life, just like when they went to the moon, they brought back some rocks. Rocks that you could find in a Newcastle coal mine, practically. I saw them myself, just like pieces of coal. Now, you could get those for probably about 2p in any colliery. But because they were brought from the moon, they're worth $48 billion. $48 billion of the taxpayers' money. And everyone's really excited. Look what we brought back. You know, it's like if you give someone $48 billion to go out shopping, you know. And you waited about, you know, 5 years, and they came back with a little sack of coal, you know, and said, look what I got. You beat them to death. Isn't it? But if they came back with that and said, but I got these from the moon. It wasn't just from any old shop. Then you could say, oh, well, I guess my money was well spent. After all, they did come from the moon. So these are called Maya Pritigyan. And their knowledge is stolen by them because they are trying the, what is called, ascending process. In the material world, everyone, their knowledge is ascending. They want to go from the unknown to the known. You understand? They want to go from the unknown to the known by relying upon their own ability. But what they don't understand is why they are unknown to begin with. You understand? This why comes in again. Why am I in ignorance? Why do I in ignorance, not know what is knowledge. Why do I have to study day and night, go to universities, colleges, accumulate? Because I'm deficient. Deficient. Just the same way, why do I have to search for happiness? Because I'm deficient. Everything I do is an example of my deficiency. Prabhupada said, from the moment we get up in the morning, we start asking questions. Where did I leave that toothbrush? Even if we're the biggest scientists in the universe. Where did I put my soap? Where's my towel? Why is the water not hot? So, immediately questions. The birds wake up. Where's food? Where's food? I saw some down in that garden. Quick, let's all go. Everyone's asking questions. So this questioning goes on from the moment we're capable of moving. We come into physical orientation. We start asking questions. Mom, what's that? Dad, what's that? You ever see these kids on trains, you know? You're sitting next to them, you know? Mom, what's that over there? Well, son, that's a tree. And there's a tree. Dad, what's that? What's that? Shut up! So we're questioning, and then all our life we've been questioned. Every moment of the day, we're questioned. Right up until we die, we question. You see? Why? Because we're completely ignorant. What is the word ignoramus? We are 100% ignoramuses. But by taking shelter of this knowledge, that knowledge, that knowledge, that knowledge, this scientist, this speculator, this philosopher, we think we're making progress. The Prabhupada said it's like if you have a blind man and he suddenly decides to take out 10,000 blind people for a tour of England. You know, can you imagine it? You know, we should do a drama that. Yeah. So they'd be all wandering around. Where's he gone? Where's everyone gone? Oh, they're all here still. I didn't know. Well, you see that place over there? So this is the arrogant scientist. They're blind, but they want to lead everyone. So everyone's chasing after them. Yes, yes, Professor Swatala. Brilliant scientist. Brilliant. Man's brilliant. Yeah. You just have to hear him. Because he defines the cosmic arrangement of space. Awe-inspiring. So... But we see that in the material world, people sit through these lectures, they go on for hours, and then they go outside and, what was that all about? Was he saying this? No, no, he was saying that. You sure? I thought he was saying this. So we're like, as Bhaktisiddhanta says, where he puts it, we're like trying to cross the Atlantic Ocean by holding on to the tail of a puppy. You see? Ocean is very gigantic, and we want to cross it. But all we have is this little puppy. So we say, come on, Fido. Let's go. But how far will we get? Poor old Fido goes down and we go with him. So therefore, Krishna comes. Yadayadahi dharmasya. Lanya bhavati bharata. Whenever and wherever. There is this adharma. What is the meaning of adharma? Adharma means whenever there is this increase of ignorance, these stupid philosophies, these demonic philosophies, these atheistic concepts, whenever there is the atheism, Krishna says, at that time I come, you see, to annihilate the miscreants, to defeat them. So we see that even 500 years ago, Krishna came. You see, he came. But There are so many idiots in this age that if he had to kill all the atheists and idiots and demons, he'd kill everyone. So therefore, he decided, the Supreme Personality of God had decided, that I will kill their illusion. This is the special causeless mercy of Lord Chaitanya. I have come to kill their illusion. So Lord Chaitanya came, he had secret weapons, just like sometimes when an army, you can't see their secret weapon, but they have a secret weapon. And then suddenly, when things get really tough, the secret weapon comes out. Boom! The enemy's plastered. So this secret weapon is there. Lord Chaitanya has come. And Srila Rupa Goswami has touched on that secret weapon. You see, he's identified that secret weapon. Namo Mahavadanayate. You see? Namo Mahavadanayate. Krishna Prema Pradayate. Krishna Prema Pradayate. You have come not to destroy, but to destroy something else. To destroy the ignorance of the living entity by giving him Krishna Prema. Everyone is searching after this nectar of Krishna Prema. So you have come. Therefore, namo maha vadanayate means you are the most magnanimous. So Krishna is so kind, just like sometimes when you see that the situation is just so finished and good instruction won't work, chastisement won't work, you know, then sometimes you just have to try and show kindness and hope that that kindness will work. So when Lord Chaitanya comes, the Mama Vadandaya, Krishna Prema Pradaya, Krishnaya Krishna, you are Krishna, Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya. You are God Himself, but you have come to deliver all the fallen souls by this chanting of Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So this is the secret weapon. So secret because it moves on sound. Sound is very, very powerful, but also very subtle. Sound is very subtle. Sometimes you see that you'll find even in the material world that countries can be destroyed on propaganda. The first thing Hitler did was he gave everyone a radio. Clever fellow. And there was only one channel. And of course, it just so happened that that was his channel. Day and night, he pumped propaganda into the people. Boom, 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 boom. Songs of the fatherland. Songs of when Germany was great. When we were a powerful nation. When people adored us and bowed at our feet. When we were the Aryans. Controlled the whole world. See, all this propaganda. All in good music. Everyone was proud to be German. Proud to have a leader like Adolf. A man who knows what a real... He wasn't even German himself. He was Austrian. But anyway. Who knows the real fatherland. So then everyone got excited. Oh, yeah, let's go. And even at one point he said, what do you want? Tanks or butter? They said, tanks! Forget the butter. Let's have tanks. So they had all these tanks and huge army. And what did he do? He ended up in a complete mess. Because he was an idiot. But that sound is so powerful that everyone was totally dedicated to this man, ready to die for him. And they did. They died for him. So similarly, this sound is so powerful that it secretly invades the heart. You see, the enemy is in the heart. Enemy is not outside. Everyone thinks the enemy is outside. Actually, the enemy is inside your heart. So, the reason we can't capture that enemy is because can't go inside the heart. We're all external. We're absorbed in our wife, family, friends, country, society, this thing, that thing, lust, greed, anger, whatever. So, this sound is going straight into the heart and killing the demons that are in there. these demonic conceptions. What is the demons? This demonic conception. I am this body. I am the Lord of all I survey. I'm the enjoyer. I'm the controller. I. Mine. So for millions of years we've been chanting this mantra. I. And it's gotten us nowhere except trouble after trouble after trouble. So now we have new mantra. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama. And immediate result, we give up intoxication, we can give up illicit sex, we can give up gambling, meat eating, we give up cinema, television, the news. We give up all these things. No attraction. They're disgusting. Ah, filthy. No attraction. Yamunacharya says, when I think of sex life, ah, my tongue curls up. I want to spit at this disgusting activity. So you may say, oh, sex disgusting? What is he on about? Sex is not disgusting. It's lovely. You have all sorts of lovely fun. But what is sex? We won't describe. It's so disgusting. So therefore, this body, bag of stool, urine, pus, mucus, bile, and air, and then you get the two dirtiest parts and you rub them together. And this is happiness. Sex life. So therefore, this is not simply a fanatical observation. It's a truthful observation. The body is disgusting and everything to do with the body is disgusting. Absolutely disgusting. Show one thing inside the body that's wonderful. It's like if someone pulls out the giblets. That's wonderful. And that's good stuff. Someone says, look at my kidney. Look at that. But still we think, because it's nice coating, nice soft skin. We look in the mirror. Good looking boy. You've conquered a few girls with a face like that. Thinking like that. So this is Maya. So therefore the sound goes in and kills the demonic mentality of all living entities so that we can become Jiva Swarupyana Nitya Krishna Das. We can become established as Nitya Krishna Das, our eternal seva to Krishna, simply by this process. Simple. Chanting Hare Krishna, taking Krishna prasad, and glorify Krishna. That's all. And you go back to Godhead in this lifetime, guaranteed. Straight back to Godhead to be with Krishna in Vrindavan. Such powerful mercy from Lord Chaitanya. Prabhupada says that God is unlimitedly powerful. But His mercy is even more unlimitedly powerful. You see? If you could understand all of God's qualities, all of His powers, all of His opulences, that thing which is called mercy, you could never ever comprehend in God. Just to use a crude example. So therefore, Lord Chaitanya is the mercy personified of Krishna. He is flowing like a huge, gigantic ocean that has no shores. There's no shores to Lord Chaitanya's mercy, drowning everyone who wants to jump in and take benefit from this mercy. Just like Prabhupada says, God is not partial. That's why we see with Krishna consciousness, all sorts of characters come. There's no partiality. The example was Jagai Madai. Jagai Madai were murderers, rapists, woman hunters, drunkards. They were the lowest of mankind, but they became completely dear to Lord Chaitanya. Great devotees, great Vaishnavas, simply by the mercy of Lord Nityananda. So that is the, that also that mercy of Lord Chaitanya is the only mercy you can get that causes no evil. You understand? No evil. All other mercy in the material world has some evil connected with it. Just like if someone gives me their money, that means they took it from someone else. Isn't it? Whenever you get money, someone else had to lose it so that you could get it. So that's the nature of the material world. So whatever you in the material world, there's always some, your gain is someone else's loss.